Welcome to another episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads. And I got home early again today, which is a miracle. I still had overtime, but I managed to get out. It's Friday and I have some time before Barb arrives, believe it or not. Usually I arrive after Barb, but 2 days in a row. One time because of a power outage, and this other time because I got some stuff done early. So I'm gonna go over some quick Comic-Con news. One of the news is not Comic-Con related, but James Gunn has been fired by Disney, which really surprised me. He did both Guardians of the Galaxy movies, which I've really enjoyed personally. They're originality and humor, and I don't know, it sort of felt like a seeing Star Wars for the first time as an old man, but putting me back in the seat of a little kid. And I was a little disappointed to hear that. These are comments he made on Twitter, I guess, 10 years ago, and they were bad at the time, but he said he's grown from that. He apologized. And he was sarcastic and all that stuff. Wow, Twitter's been around 10 years. That's incredible. But I was disappointed because I was hoping that Gunn would finish the trilogy and whatever happens to the Guardians after that. That would be cool. But I was hoping he could finish his vision of and close out that series, because it seems like all the movies, like the Iron Man ended with three, and Thor ended with three, and Cap ended with three. And it's kind of like launching this new era. So, yeah, I don't know. I feel sad about it, but it just goes to show, be careful what you say, because it may bite you in the ass. So, yeah, I was kind of bummed out about that. The next thing that I thought was kind of exciting is Marvel's to revisit history and creators for their 80th anniversary in 2019. This is a big deal because, in addition to their current roster of creators, Marvel states that many longtime creators of the past would be returning, and that's what I'm excited about because those creators are what drove my passion. So it will be interesting, and they plan to launch new stories with several long dormant non-superhero comic books in the Timely era. So yeah, it could be a really interesting thing. They haven't launched said any details, but I find it very exciting. This one I'm excited about, but for many different reasons. Those people that are close to me will know why. I'm a big Kirby fan, like huge Kirby fan. And one of the first cons that I've ever went to, Heroes Con, I met Tom Scholey, and I used to get commissions from him back when they were a lot cheaper. They've gone out expensive. But Tom has meant a lot to me at conventions, and he knows I show up as panels. I'm very supportive of his work, no matter what it is, whether it be a mini comic or American Barbarian or G.I. Joe versus Transformers, I'm there. I am there. Whether he does a one shot for Captain America, anytime he does anything, I am there because I have at least eight commissions from him, maybe more, and I love them. And his passion for Jack Kirby makes me more passionate for Jack Kirby. He is fantastic, and he was going to be bringing to IDW a GoBots series. And for those that know me, I've never been big into the Transformers. I don't even care less about GoBots. But because it's Tom Scholey, I am very excited about it. So we'll see how all that turns out. That should be starting pretty soon. I don't know if they have a date. I didn't go into it to see what date that would happen. But it was announced at San Diego Comic-Con. Is there anything else that I care about? Neil Gaiman's Miracle Man is gonna resume in 2019. That could be interesting. I still haven't read Miracle Man. Can you believe that? I was hoping that they would collect the stuff that made it popular, and they never did. They got to a certain point, they collected the Golden Age stuff, and I guess I never read it. I do have some of the Golden Age stuff. I might get into it at some point because I've been into the Golden Age. The other thing is Marvel Knights is going to relaunch with Donny Cates at the helm. Marvel Knights is a big deal. When especially for Daredevil, for me personally, Punisher and Daredevil did really good, but it took a while for Punisher to hit stride because originally he died and became an angel, and that didn't go over. That was the first Marvel Knights series that it was very interesting, and then Garth Ennis got a hold of it and it took off. But I was always a fan of the Marvel Knights stuff. I have most of it. I don't know if I have all of it. But they focused on street level characters, and I really enjoyed it. So we'll see what Donny Cates could do with this property. I enjoyed Donny Cates' work quite a bit, especially his indie work, more so than his stuff that's mainstream. But he has a great imagination. He has my interest on Venom and Cosmic Ghost Rider, and we'll see where he takes me. There was a Cup of Joe panel, but I don't know what came out of it. And I think that's about it. I'm gonna click on the Cup of Joe panel and see if there was anything that jumps out. They talk about Marvel Knights in there too. There's not much. So that was the headlines. Oh, I think I read somewhere, I don't know where I saw it, but it was something about a Stargirl comic book coming exclusive to the streaming service, so that's interesting. Like a digital-only Stargirl, and that's Geoff Johns's baby. That's what got his career started. So we'll see how that goes. Let's see. Do I have any other? We'll jump into questions. Best surprise series. Something that surprised you. Something you really didn't think you would like, but it was a pleasant surprise. Well, I go in thinking I'm gonna like everything. And if you know me, you will probably say, "Why does Mike love everything?" I don't know. I guess I was surprised. I was surprised I really enjoyed Batman 51. I really dug it with the Mr. Freeze thing. I know it's been controversial because of some people getting too into how courtroom drama should work and how juries are chosen, but I really enjoyed Batman 51, so that surprised me. What also surprised me is one of my favorite books of the year ever is Batman Elmer Fudd. The reason it surprised me is because I usually don't click, my brain doesn't click with the Tom King writing. And it was one of my favorite comics of all time. I loved it. His voice for Elmer Fudd was spot on. I grew up with these cartoons. I loved every minute of it. I own a lot of the archives of these cartoons. That bar scene was fantastic. The way they introduced Elmer Fudd into this noir-like comic book was fantastic. Really enjoyed it. What else? I mean, I love what I love. I kind of like know what I like. There's usually not any surprises, but thank you, Kirk, for the question. I have another question. I hope I could get through it before Barb gets here. But this is from my friend and co-host of Geek Brunch Retrocast, Rob Krieger. And he says, Hi, I was listening to Mike M's Weekly Reads, and it made me think of a question in terms of back issues. How do you determine how much to spend any given month? Do you set a maximum budget, or are there other factors that come into play? I listened to an episode in which you bought a handful of Amazing Spider-Man and Ghost Rider, and in both cases, you still have plenty of missing issues you could pick up. So, what makes you decide to stop adding comics to your cart? If you bought four or five Spidey issues, why not keep going and get six or seven? Or do you feel comfortable about talking about it? I don't like to tell you anybody how much I spend, but it is a lot. And that's for just comics that are current. And that includes all the trades and shit that I buy and everything else that comes in my DCBS weekly order. But you gonna stay out there? I will say I don't know anybody and of podcasters or anybody that spends more, that's not a shop owner, that spends more on comics than I do a month. Let's just say that, okay? I haven't met anybody that does. And there are some hardcore spenders on that comic book page feed. And one of them's a world record holder. They don't get my current intake. But what I usually do is my brain kicks in and it kind of knows a limit. I don't have a limit. It knows a limit. So like when I hit a, I don't know, $300 mark on my comicshop.com, I might stop. And it also includes rabbit holes. So like I don't stay focused on Spider-Man. Those Spider-Man issues I talked about were ones that I already read on my what is it called? The app, Marvel Unlimited. And I liked them so much, I wanted to acquire them. So I picked all the ones that I had read, and then I figured in a future order, if I read further, I would get those. So that's how I picked the Spider-Man. The Ghost Rider, I kind of went up to a certain point. I said, I am going to get all the Ghost Rider, which was like a handful. It was like 15 books, 16 books. Everything from the end all the way to issue 28 of volume 1. So I did that. And then I figured, well, the rest of them are going to be quite expensive. I have one, I have three, and then I have a, I don't know, 10 of books in between there. So let's say if I have 12 books between there, 28, I got about another 12 or so books to get. And then I have a complete run. So I kind of like capped it there. Plus, I had a bunch of other shit in my box that wasn't expensive. But I usually focus on like maybe two or three expensive books. My next order, which I'll probably go over, I'll talk about that, but it focuses on rabbit holes again, focuses on some Legion of Superheroes and stuff like that. First appearances of Legion of Superheroes. And yeah, that's a good question. It's more of a mental thing, a mental exercise. Do I have boxes ready to take in this? I just bought a full run of Invaders. I think I talked about it yesterday. It has all the Invaders comics except for issue 20. And I think I talked about it. Somebody IM'd me and said, "Hey, it's coming from my collection and I'm filling it for you." So God bless him. Reed. I think he's done that for me like two, three times. And he doesn't have to. He knows I can buy it. He just knows I think he listens to the podcast, likes what I do, and knows that I'm a collector. And he wants that book in my hands, I guess. And I've had a lot of other people answer the call. Even though I'm not asking, and it's most appreciative. Andrew Shaw did give me Savage Dragon that I was missing to complete that run, and I could name a lot of other people. Somebody sent me a collection of Ultraverse when I was trying to complete that. Like, I was missing an annual. That was, so that's like some cool stuff that people have done for me through this podcast. They hear that I need something, they'll send me a book. And they're not expensive books, but it's something that they got at a dollar box or something, and they're willing to send me it. So it's a good question, but it's more like I already spent this amount on new comics. My logical brain kicks in and say, "Ooh, I don't want to go beyond this limit," even though I could. That's what happens. I like to keep that My Comic Shop order to $300 or less if possible. Maybe a little bit over 300, but no more than that. So, I hope that answers your question. I just want to talk about two other things, lightning round. So, I found out on Amazon that they have these quality comic collected editions, and I bought the Complete Military Comics Part 1, which is Black Hawk. And I was worried about I clicked on the inside. You could do that for a lot of books. I said, "Oh, that's pretty acceptable. These are really good readable copies, and I am going to pursue more quality books. Like, if I could get Police Comics in this format, and Plastic Man, and National Comics, I'm going to seek them out, and I will complete them because I'm impressed with the quality. They're not nowhere near remastering that Marvel and DC does, but they are good reading paperbacks, and they're not expensive. The other thing that came in the mail today was my hardcover from the Jimmy Palmiotti paper films, a Kickstarter, Killing Time in America, with an exclusive Amanda Connor cover. I tend to get the Amanda Connor covers. If I get in on time, they use like limit them to 60. And this is a nice hardcover. I posted it on Twitter. It does have some nudity. It has some titties, but in order to put it on Twitter, I covered up the nipples. So it's a nice card cover. And then it came out with two prints, like matte prints. They're beautiful. One is a signed copy by Amanda Connor of the cover, and then there's another one with a bird taking the top off of the girl. And then it has the main characters like walking with their guns and weapons. And then it's signed by the creators, Jimmy Palmiotti and Craig Whedon, who does the interiors. Really cool. Get it if you get a chance when this releases. Go to my Twitter account, even though you might have to scroll a bazillion things. You will find a copy, or Google Killing Time in America, Amanda Connor cover, and you'll be able to see that. I want to thank you for listening to this part. I will be back later to go over some of the weekly reads, and I want to thank you for listening and supporting the show. Peace out. Bye-bye. Hello, and I'm back with Mike M's Weekly Reads. I just went over some questions, and now I want to talk briefly about Amazing Spider-Man number one and why I liked it so much. I know it didn't float the boat for the majority of people, but Nick liked it, and that's all that matters. But we've both been on a Spider-Man kick, and we both came off of Clone Saga reading it in its entirety. He's actually gone beyond where I've gone. I read the first omnibus, and he read all the way through the trades. And it looks like the trades had some more elements to it, but I wasn't going to get Amazing Spider-Man. I was on this thing where I was, man, I think I'm going to wait until it 6 months and then just read it on Marvel Unlimited. But I broke on several of them. I broke on Cosmic Ghost Rider, I broke on X-23, I broke on Amazing Spider-Man and several others. So it didn't last long, but I'm glad I don't know what I was thinking with Amazing Spider-Man. I have jumped off from time to time, and I regret it, and then I always go back and then fill in the holes, having to buy those back issues. So it's better just to stay on. But what happened is, what I usually do is I bought this copy at the comic shop because I didn't pre-order it. So I went to the comic shop, I bought it, got my 25% discount instead of what I would have got, which is a 50% discount. But I opened it up and I had two digital codes, which is very unusual. But I've had some Marvel comics where, that I purchased that had no sticker before, so I couldn't enter it in. And what I do is, the way I do my comics is I sort them alphabetically by company, and I put a Marvel stack together, I put a DC stack together, and I put an indie stack together, sorted by company and alphabetically. Just that's how I put it together. And once I have that put together, I go over to my database, I plug in the barcode scanner, and I open up Comic Base and I scan all these books in. I go bloop, 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 and add them to inventory. And then I add my trades to the inventory. So I scan those in. Sometimes the trades aren't entered in. So I have two choices. Do I wait a week and let somebody else enter them in, or sometimes I just enter them in myself and it's not a big deal. You do the barcode and it has at least the metadata for the cost and stuff like that. And then what I usually enter in at a minimum is the writer and the artist. And that's pretty much it. And, I put the collecting. So like if it collects issues X through Y, and then I separate them by commas if it goes across titles and such. And then I do a submit to Comic Base, and then they check it and it comes in the next release. That's what I usually do. But anyway, I'm losing track of what I was talking about. So I sent Nick a copy because I knew he just finished reading Clone Saga, and he really enjoyed it. And then a lot of people chimed in and called it bad writing. I hate when they do that. For one thing, it makes me feel like a fool when somebody says, "Oh, you like bad writing." Oh, fuck you. If you, cl I can claim something's good writing, and you could claim something's good writing. But when you make a broad statement like that, it's kind of bullshit, in my opinion. Just like art is something I might like, you might not like. So I try to refrain from using broad ass terms and use me or I or how I think about something. And sometimes I'll even recommend a book to, if I didn't like it, to somebody who might enjoy something, because I read a lot, so like I could kind of say, well, if you enjoyed this, you might like this, even if I didn't like it. And I always think there's a comic book out there for somebody, and somebody is going to enjoy it. But why I liked Amazing Spider-Man, first, the Otley art was great. I started reading it, and I was like, this is kind of odd. It's re weird flow, because I think it opened up, and this is like 3 weeks after it came out, with him in his apartment and his new roommates. And I thought, this is odd. Okay, he's got a roommate, and one of them's Boomerang. And then I was like, you know what? Nick Spencer wrote The Superior Foes of Spider-Man, so there's Boomerang. So I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. And then the way I saw the preview pages is I'm like, okay, there's going to be an alien invasion. He's going to fight with the Avengers. And I wasn't too excited about that. I've tired of the big alien invasions. But what it turned out to be was Mysterio. And I found that interesting. And there was some humor in there. And it worked for me because he was like poking fun of Mysterio. He has a new job as as like an editor for the paper in a certain section, and he seems really happy with that job after he left his company behind. But somebody dug up some research on him that he had plagiarized his doctorate when he got it, and was out there looking to destroy him. And I like that because, God, there's so much going on with the news right now, like just early releases of stuff without fact checking, and it's just like a fascinating thing on contemporary issues. I thought that was pretty interesting, and it came out of Superior Spider-Man, which I love, so it's got a Superior Spider-Man vibe, a Superior Foes of Spider-Man vibe, which I really loved, and then it had Mysterio, which I thought was pretty cool, and then it hit me in the face, and I was like, oh wow, they're bringing MJ back in the picture. And for me, MJ is Peter's love. I mean, there's been several of them. There's Black Cat, there's been Gwen Stacy, who some of the old timers in the Bronze Age just absolutely love her, but I never really bonded to Gwen. A lot of stuff I read, she was a clone, so it's very strange. But I've always been an MJ fan because when I started going hardcore on Spider-Man was the David Michelinie in years, right before Todd McFarlane came. Big Dick David Michelinie fan, whether he was writing Spider-Man or Iron Man, I loved his work. And I thought this one was going to be a great one to. I love that MJ's back in the picture and he's having problems because he gets fired because of this article. So, Robbie fires him and he's like, "Well, crap, I don't have a job." He goes to talk to Aunt May and then Aunt May gives him like this huge amount of shit. And I had just read Clone Saga and Aunt. And other stuff. And when Aunt May's upset with him, it's like it's heartbreaking. What did I read recently? I was reading the I'm reading around 298, somewhere around there. And Aunt May's mad at him in those issues too. So I was like, I just read this, but it's a decades ago. And now I'm seeing it happen again where Aunt May's like, why are you lying? Why, just tell me the truth. What is up with you? And why did you lie about your doctorate and all this stuff? And so he's got this huge weight over his head because he's like, okay, I lost my job. What am I going to do? It's like putting things back into basics for Pete. And MJ comes to him and says, I'm here for you. I'll be your support. And I just love that relationship is getting back together because it was a big part of the Spider-Man books that I've read and loved is MJ is in it and she's always been the heart. And I was even okay when they said the marriage is no more because I'm able to adapt unlike some people. I don't throw a hissy fit. I just want to read it. I want to read the history. I like change because then it makes you appreciate when things go back to the status quo. And sometimes the change is absolutely wonderful and sometimes it's not. But you get to grow with the character and you get to see things that happen and I really liked it. And then it had some back matter, which I really dug, which was a different artist, and I can't remember who the artist was, but it had the trial of Mysterio. The one thing I thought was odd is when Mysterio was on trial, he was still in his costume, and I'm like, oh, that's kind of weird. It kind of like took me out just a little bit. But then, it got sort of interesting because there's this other character that's manipulating Mysterio. And the other thing I liked is the person that wrote the article about Peter to take him off of the paper and get him fired. Because you got to remember that Otto Octavius was the Superior Spider-Man. And he's the one that started the company. He's the one that got the doctorate. He's the one that did all this work. Even though Peter is smart enough to obtain that degree, him and Kurt Connor, and he's Kurt Connor the Lizard, are going to help him retest to prove that he can pass that doctorate. So I thought that was fascinating. I just thought it was, I loved it. And it could be that my expectations to it were going low, although I do like Nick Spencer's writing. Like I like what he's done independent on Independence. I like what he did with Cap. I've liked a lot of his work. So his work just sort of registers with me and where I am in my life. And I like his writing. It flows in my brain really well. So like it started off kind of like I didn't know how to make it out, and then when it finished, I sort of fell in love with this, mostly because of the MJ, the Aunt May things that were established. The lawyer for Mysterio was the Beetle, so there was also a callback to the Superior Foes of Spider-Man, which Nick Spencer wrote. So like all of that working together, all those different plot points, it just worked for me. The two things that I thought were odd was Mysterio when he was in court, they left him keep his costume on. I thought that was weird. The other thing I thought was weird is that when he went to the university to see what was going on with it, with the reporter, like to see if he can retest at the university and become to get his degree again, that Kurt Connor was the Lizard. So I thought that was odd too. And I don't know if that's just for like an artistical choice or if there's something going on, because there is a big bad and they've shown him, and I don't know if I've seen that character before, so I can't really comment on it. But somebody that listens to this podcast may call me on it and say, "Oh, that character that was manipulating Mysterio was blah," and I'll say, "Oh, and where did blah appear?" And then I can go back and read it and refresh my memory. If I hadn't read it, I can read it at the time. The other book that I was surprised in Marvel about was X-23. It ran pretty, flowed really well with the all new Wolverine. Into the new series, because it had Honey Badger, it had a lighter tone, and I've never been a fan. Like I like X-23 when she's mutilating people, like in X-Force, or when X-23 first came out, when in NYX, and when she was a animal, that's when she was my favorite. And they toned her down for all new Wolverine and gave her all these clones. And I like the concept of her trying to protect them from stealing blood and cloning more people, and her working with Beast, and then finding out that the big bad is using a scientist for cloning to bring back the cuckoos, and there were originally five, and two were dead, and we'll see what happens. But I find the cuckoos like freaky, so it added a horror element to it that I really enjoyed. And then I'm going to talk briefly. So this is like a little Marvel synopsis, Immortal Hulk. So I've heard a lot of good things about this, and then. So I always thought I was gonna like it because Martin was talking about it. A few other people on Twitter had said some good things about it. And what drove me to read it was somebody hating on it, which is odd. Like I was like, okay, this guy's hating on it. Why is he hating on it? Because I hear good things, and I went to go read it before bed yesterday, and I actually read the two issues and I absolutely loved it. I thought it was a 5 out of 5. And the thing I loved about it is you can kill Bruce, but you can't kill the Hulk. So it makes him sort of immortal. And it linked itself into like Hawkeye in issue two, Hawkeye actually shooting the arrow in him and thoughts about that. And but what I really liked is the horror element. It had like a monster type aspect to it and paid tribute to the Silver Age because he can only turn to the Hulk at night. And that's the way it used to be. That's the way it started. And the Hulk is like vamped. He has different levels of intelligence and all this stuff. With this Hulk, he's a little creepy, but he speaks very fluent, so it's sort of interesting. And the other thing I liked is they have a reporter, and it's a female reporter, and her name is McGee. So, like, if you follow the TV show, he's like, Mr. McGee, you won't like me when I'm angry. And he was the main guy that was following him, and he's got this reporter following him as well. And so I really liked that. It had elements of the Silver Age, it had elements of the TV show as Wandering, and it had elements of a horror movie. And all of those combined just really worked for me. Plus, Joe Bennett on art is amazing, and the cover, I don't know who's drawing the covers, but they're probably like the best covers I've seen in comics. They're just spectacular. Not just in terms of a good drawing on the cover, but what the cover's representing. It just looks amazing. So yeah, I loved it. And then I'm gonna talk a little bit. I'm gonna go over some books real quick. So I'll stop with that, and we'll talk about books from 11 November 6, 2017 to 11/12/2017. And there was a total of 26 books that week, 8 Marvel, 1 Dynamite, and 17 DC. So I went into the DC mode again for that week, starting with the 3 out of 5s. There were a lot of 3 out of 5s, and that's unusual for me, but could have been my mood that week. Spirits of Vengeance, number 2. Which I really liked the first one, so the second one took a seat back for me. It's the team prepares for an upcoming battle with demons to save the Earth. Hellstrom goes to recruit his sister Satana. This is the Victor Gershler series, I believe, and I really like Victor Gershler. The next one is Centipede number 4. This one started out better than it ended, in my opinion, but I still want more Atari books. Dale is acid tripping and thinks he spends years as a centipede on another planet as he ate some of those mushrooms like that you see in the game, and I think he shroomed out. We have Action Comics 991. Superman confronts Jor-El and they fight. Jor-El says he's being controlled by someone else and gets sucked away before Superman can save him. And that storyline is still going on in the Bendis run, so it's good to pay attention to this stuff. Our Fighting Forces 155 and 156. These are Jack Kirby, and I rated them like a 3 out of 5, which means I just enjoyed it. This had Sarge and Gunner need to blow up a bridge, and Gunner is injured. Sarge meets up with a guy in a fur hat and the partisans, and they attack a city ruled by Nazis, and Sarge goes to blow the bridge. He succeeds, but a tank manages to take out the partisans before Sarge is rescued by the rest of the losers. He finds out a guy in the fur has been dead for a while, so ghosts helped him out. That was strange. This sounds better than a 3 out of 5. The losers go to New York for furlough, and there are Nazi PT boats they had to take out. So that's obviously the second story. Cloud and crew manage to take out a spy and stop the PT boat from firing on Broadway. So they were actually stateside for that issue. Why did I rate those a 3 out of 5? They sound excellent. Detective Comics 449. The Midnight Rustler is stealing all the cows in Gotham, and Batman has to stop him because of a beef shortage. Flash and Sue set up a mystery for Ralph on his birthday, where he has to take down some villains who are going to blow up a warehouse. This also sounds fantastic, because it's got Ralph and Sue, and it has the birthday thing. And if you remember Identity Crisis, oh my lord, I rated it a 3 out of 5. I have no idea what's wrong with me this week. Justice League, A Midsummer Night's Nightmare. I don't even remember reading this, so I can tell you why this was a 3 out of 5. No Man causes humanity to spark, like give powers to save Earth from a future threat. He suppresses the JLA members to forget they were heroes through Dr. Destiny. They had good lives, but they started to remember. Martian Manhunter did not want to come back from his dream of a family. Martian Manhunter and Aquaman restore humanity at an unknown cost of what can happen in the future. No Man gets away. And I have something like he's a controller, so if you know what the controllers are, they're part of the DC universe. Another 3 out of 5 is Mr. Miracle number 4. This is the Tom King run. Kind of funny as Barda beats the shit out of Light Ray and Mr. Miracle is tied by Orion in a true false test. That was ridiculous. He is also to be executed. Mr. Miracle punches Orion in the face. That sounds like a good issue, but I didn't feel it, I guess. Batgirl 13 and 14, Batgirl and Catwoman, and a little girl save Catwoman's cat and a celebrity dog. Batgirl and Nightwing team up as the two girls in costumes kill themselves in front of them. A lot of flashback sequences. That also sounds fantastic, but I gave it a 3 out of 5, which means I just liked it. We then get into the 4 out of 5s. This week there were no 5 out of 5s, so something was going on with me this week. We have Royals number 10. This is an Inhumans book. It's a 4 out of 5. Lose their ship, but Maximus and the other girl combine their powers to save them from the Celestials. I don't know who the other girl is. Why? Yeah, that didn't sound like a 4 out of 5, as some of those 3 out of 5s sound better. Gotham City Garage, number 3. Harlequin and the Joker fight Batman and Batgirl in this post-apocalyptic world. They think Kara killed Jim Gordon. Batman may have tampered with the video. We have a Marvel book next. Master of Kung Fu 126. This is when they continued the numbering, but they're just one shots. Shang-Chi has a monkey now and gets attacked by ninjas from Dr. Preyus, who wants to transfer Shang-Chi's brain into an octopus to teach him Kung Fu. And it was a done in one, I said. Yeah, I knew it was a done in one. That sounds ridiculous. But obviously, I really liked it. We have X-Men Gold number 15. The main X-Men team on Mojo World take it to the control center. Magneto, Polaris, and Danger punch a hole in the wall to escape their scenario. And if you remember Danger, she's the Cerebro Danger Room that actually manifested herself in a character called Danger. We have Birds of Prey number 11 through 16. This must have been me. I wonder what volume this is. I didn't read it, but maybe we can figure it out. This sounds like the original Birds of Prey. The Birds of Prey find out that Oracle is feeding Calculator information. Calculator needs their help to rescue his wife and Wendy and Marvin. Those were his kids. So they're, if you know the Super Friends, it was the Super Friends, Wendy and Marvin. So that's where that came from. Matter of fact, they pre-52, Wendy and Marvin were killed, I believe, by the dog. Wendy and Marvin and. I can't think of the dog's name. Catwoman was hired by Poison Ivy to steal the formula for a corporation. Corporation was using a miracle fertilizer that was killing honeybees. Birds of Prey take down the CEO, free a new Oracle and Calculator and family. New Oracle leaves. Batgirl decides to hang back and be Oracle for a day, while Huntress and Black Canary go on to a student field trip and run into Blackfire. They're are able to trap him again. I thought Blackfire was a Starfire sister, so I don't know what I'm saying there. joins them on a camping trip. Catwoman and Poison Ivy become part of the cast as Oracle. She saves Batman and the detective crew from drowning in a Riddler trap. A flu epidemic is taking out Gotham. Ollie visits Canary, and the epidemic is affecting only men. The CDC involved, and all the women unite to find the daughters of Gotham who are poisoning the men. Wonder Woman and Lois guest star with all of the Gotham women. So I think this is either the New 52 volume or the Rebirth, and because of that last few sentences. We then get Punisher 87 and Punisher War Zone 24 and 25. Also, Punisher War Journal 63 through 64. The Punisher fakes his death when the building collapses on his enemies. He meets a girl. Oh, this is the suicide run. I really like this one. He meets the girl, and her father is arrested. But when they go through the fingerprints, they know he's alive, and Virgil is the team that's trying to hunt down the Huntress, and other groups make their way to a small town, which becomes a war zone. Punisher kills Crazy Blackwell and a lot of the people that go into the small town to kill him. The two Punisher cops, Lynn and Payback. Micro thinks Frank is alive and wants to rebuild. And then finally, Thor 407. He rescues Hercules and High Evolutionary. I was probably reading this on Marvel Unlimited. Wonder Girl Knights were going to betray Thor, but all perish, and the Recorder helps Thor. Yeah, this was a DeFalco Thor, I believe, and really good issue. And I probably didn't give myself enough credit for the Marvel books, but I'll go back and do that. So I'm going to try to do one more week before Barb gets here. There was a total of the next week was November 13th through November 19th. We had a total of 33 comics, 3 Valiant, 2 Marvel, 4 Image, 5 Dynamite, 14 DC, 1 Black Mask, and 4 Action Lab. Great distribution. And I think I need to add one more to the Dynamite. That's 6 for a total of 34. So we have Skin and Earth number 2. A guy asks a girl out for the final date and then says he does not expect to see her again. This is the post-apocalyptic setting that deals with the environment, where they ran the environment to shit. And the male lives in a richer area that's not as contaminated, and the female lives in a poor area that is really contaminated. And this is being adapted into either a TV show or a movie. They announced it at San Diego Comic-Con. I rated it a 3 out of 5. The next 3 out of 5 was Zombie Tramp versus Vamplade 1 through 3. They switch bodies while fighting and end up fighting a lead vampire parasite guy that joins their bodies again. So they like did the vice versa or the Freaky Friday type switch. The next one is Zombie Tramp Halloween Special 2015 number 1. Zombie Tramp protects a young girl from a demon that killed her mom and sister for the blood to become human. So the demon was trying to become human and killed her mom and sister, so she was protecting the young girl for that. We can then get into the 4 out of 5s. Ballistic number 1. In a future, HVAC working decides he. I don't know what the fuck I'm writing here. He owns so much money that him and his organic gun are going to start robbing banks. I wonder what I mean by HVAC. It's probably an HVAC worker. That's probably what I meant to say. I need to be awake when I write these things. Maestro 1 through 2, this was an Image book I didn't intend to pick up, and I picked it up at the comic shop, and I really enjoyed it. In a world of magic, the master is killed, and his next in line is very distant son of Earth. He's banished there when he was younger, and now he's back because all his wives and offspring were slaughtered. So his son that is on Earth, his distant son, is the only one left to become the master. And he is changing the rules, and a lot of people do not like it. A girl from his past actually betrays him, but Maestro's was good. It was really good. Then get into a DC book, Danger Girl, The Chase, number one. A mysterious case has to be retrieved from the Dragon Lady. It appears to cause weather and gravity events. A huge chase scene, and when everything looks like the case is going to blow, Abby throws it in the water, and then she brings it back up. It appears that they went back in time, and the suitcase never got damaged. It was a cool adrenaline run. And if you guys have ever read Danger Girl, the thing that's amazing about this is kind of like a Charlie's Angels type team, but with more action. They flow really well, and it's really high-paced action. We have Teen Titans 8, Deathstroke 19, and Teen Titans The Lazarus Contract Special Number 1. This is Deathstroke takes power from young Wally. Wally recruits Jericho to see if they can stop Deathstroke from bringing back Grant Wilson. Rose is in the hospital. Deathstroke tries several times to go back in time and save his son. It is not working, but then Robin stops Wally West's heart, and they are able to get the situation under control. Wally West, Kid Flash, now has a heart condition, and now that takes place in Titans. Ragman number two, the brother and sister attack Rory and try to take the rags from him. He possesses all of the unit in the rags. So what I mean by unit, that was his like military unit, that they're actually in the rags. We have Batgirl 15 and 16. It's flashbacks with Robin and Batgirl as the investigator friend who is working for the Mad Hatter. The Red Queen is drugging people, and they kill themselves while she controls them. She is the sister of Batgirl's friend who died of a drug overdose. They originally thought it was her. So this was a pretty interesting Batgirl arc. I remember liking this one quite a bit. We had Teen Titans 9 through 13. We have Black Manta goes after Jackson and Mother, but not for the love of his son, but for the necklace he wears that will lead him to the treasure. So his son thinks otherwise, and Jackson is the aqua lad that was in the Young Justice cartoon. They brought him over to DC, I think, in Brightest Day. He wounds his mother, who is brought back by the Titans. She has hard water powers is from Zabel. Manta is using his son to get the artifact that will give him more powers. The Titans show up and are able to help Aqualad defeat his father and get the ring. Tempest takes the ring to hide it and give Jackson the title Aqualad. Damian and team go rescue his father after the Dark Knight's events. The Riddler is empowered to keeping them out with the help of Harlequin. Croc and Green Arrow able to get to the center. Damian tries to recruit Green Arrow's sister Red Arrow. The team tries to convince Wally to come back now, and Starfire is the leader. And I'm gonna have to pause this real quick, so I'll be back in a bit. Okay, I'm back, and let's see where I left off. Titans 12 through 13. Omen confronts Simon in prison, and he unwillingly gives the location where they're keeping Bumblebee's memories. So this was the Bumblebee stuff with Mal. This was pretty good stuff. He also tells her of a traitor among them. So like Simon says, "Hey, there's a traitor among you." They invade the Hive facility, but someone tipped them off, and they could not retrieve the memories of Bumblebee. So, and they had a kid too, so like it's pretty strange that they wiped her out. Donna and Wally kiss. That was pretty interesting. His pacemaker is giving him problems, and his pacemaker didn't go nuts because of the kiss, by the way. So don't think that. Nightwing knows there's a traitor. So what Simon, Simon, let them know is true. There is a traitor amongst them. We then have Nailbiter 1 and 2. FBI agent Charles Carroll calls his friend Nicholas Finch, who is about to kill himself, to fly out to Buckaroo, Oregon, because he found out the origins of serial killers. From there, when he gets there, his friend is missing. Recently, the nail biter got off for murder there, and they go question him. His friend's apartment is burned down, and the body needs to be identified. One of the kids there was also murdered and hung outside the murder store. So, this is an interesting image title that deals with an area that manifests serial killers, and it was a really good start to the story. We have Adventures into Fear. I just said Fear 15. The Nexus is controlling people to kill one another. The family has to find the tome, and that family is the grandfather and the two kids that have been in the Adventures into Fear with Man-Thing story arc. So they're like supporting cast members that keep going on. And it takes the link with the family book and to Atlantis and also with the Man-Thing. So it shows the link with the family book to Atlantis and to the Man-Thing. So Atlantis is sort of linked to the Man-Thing, which is pretty interesting. So that was 4 out of 5s. Those went from Ballistic all the way to Fear, number 15. We now get into the 5 out of 5s, which is dominated by Valiant. We have Bloodshot Salvation. Magic talks to Ray through Punk Mambo. Ray says he's in 4002. She takes daughter to the hospital, and baby turns Bloodshot into the present. In the future, she goes with the Bloodshots to Colin King's old castle. Bloodshot confronts Daddy. That's Magic's ma father. Really creepy scenario, and looks like he's going to kill him, and Omen turns him off. So that was interesting, 'cause Omen turned Bloodshot off. They like hit him with a pulse. So Bloodshot was gonna confront and kill Daddy, but Omen interfered. We have Howard the Duck number 13. He's in an asylum. They find out Howard is really a duck through X-rays. That was a good issue. I think Kiss gets involved in either in 13 and 14 as well. The band Kiss. We got Shadow Green Hornet, Dark Knights 1 through 5. It was a pre-World War II. The Shadow and Green Hornet team up to stop the Japanese and Nazis from corrupting and destroying the American infrastructure. The two stop Khan from destroying the infrastructure. FDR, Tesla, comic references, Underground New York. So many historical references that I loved it. Damon. Why did I say that? Oh, that's this. This actually goes with Howard the Duck. So that's what it was, is all the World War II references and such. And I knew it would involve Kiss, so that's why I had commented on it. Damon Hellstrom finds out that Winda, the girl, is not possessed, even though her body was able to bring in the four members of Kiss. So this was, well, I don't know if this was Kiss's first appearance or if it's the magazine. Religious Nut teams up with a head doctor to convince something is wrong with Winda, even though the doctor was just setting her up for release. Strange doctor who makes his assistant do strange things. Hellstrom comes out, but instead of the powers going to him, they go to Howard. So Howard the Duck now has the powers of the son of Satan. So that was right below the Shadow and the Green Hornet, which I really loved. We have Ninjak Volume 1, Number 4. Ninjak saves a young boy. A lot of history of Ninjaks, starting with A and B. Ninja D is murdered, and Ninjak is trying to find out who did it and questions Ninja D3, a backup. The first appearance of Madame Charade, and Ninjak is shot. So it was a really good Ninjak story. We have Harbinger Renegade number 0. Really enjoyed this issue where the hardcore had to go after Solomon only to be abused and taken over by Alpha. So I don't even know if this story arc ever finished. Only Charlie and one other managed to escape. So that's after hardcore. So there's a lot of murder, and there's only two members of hardcore that make it out. So the 5 out of 5s were dominated by Valiant, Dynamite, and Marvel. So there's a total of 34, and I want to thank you for listening. I do want to do one more thing, and maybe I don't need to do it online. Random. Number generator. Min and six and generate. So I actually the generator generated item six. So if I bring up who entered the contest to win the Batman, the contest was really simple. All you had to do is retweet the show, and only six people did it. So there wasn't a lot. Either people weren't interested or people didn't listen. One of the things happened. Let me save this and then bring up Mike M's questions. So, Curtis Hempler wins it. So I'm gonna have to contact him and get his address information and send him the Walmart Batman 100-page giant. See if he's interested in it. If he's not interested in it, I will do another generation to the remaining people and see if anybody else is interested. So, congratulations, Curtis. Thank you for retweeting, and we'll see if you want it. So, thanks. And if you want to reach me, you can reach me at mike@comicbooknoise.com. That's my email. My Twitter is at Mike Myers Brunch. The show is found on Geek Brunch Podcast. You can leave an iTunes review under Geek Brunch Podcast. You can leave comments under geekbrunchpodcast.com. That's the website. Or you can leave it on Twitter or on Facebook. If you search for Geek Brunch Podcast, click the like button. You could follow all the episode threads there. I want to thank you for listening, and congratulations to Curtis for winning. And I want to thank Kyle, Bill, Too Old, Too New Podcast, Nick Wetmore, and Donnie Salvo as well for retweeting the show for that particular week. And I will talk to you again soon. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you later. Bye.